This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL.
Listen now to a talk Carl Pepine had with Dr. Gregory Lipp, professor of cardiovascular medicine at the University of Birmingham and adjunct professor of cardiovascular sciences with the thrombosis research unit at Aalborg University, Denmark. They cover improved outcomes by integrated care of anticoagulated patients with atrial fibrillation using the simple atrial fibrillation better care pathway.
Welcome, Greg.
Thank you, Carl.
Gregory's going to talk to us about improved outcomes by integrated care of anticoagulated patients with atrial fibrillation using the simple ABC. Greg, tell us what ABC is.
Well, the acronym stands for the Atrial Fibrillation Better Care Pathway. But just to explain what the pathway involves, I'll take a few steps back because firstly, we appreciate atrial fibrillation as the commonest heart rhythm problem, and these patients are very often elderly with multiple comorbidities. We focus a lot on stroke prevention in atrial fibrillation, and quite rightly so. But when we manage the whole patient with atrial fibrillation, stroke prevention is one component of atrial fibrillation management. We are focusing a lot on managing symptoms because this brings into the patient-centered and symptom-directed decisions on rate control and rhythm control. And of course, these patients have multiple cardiovascular and comorbidity risk factors that have to be addressed. Many of the guidelines now have also focused on lifestyle aspects with regard to managing atrial fibrillation, for example, obesity, avoidance of stimulants such as alcohol, screening for precipitants or lifestyle things in a sense like sleep apnea. All these things need to be addressed. Now, we have been working a lot with our colleagues in primary care in Birmingham, because the starting concept is the principles of atrial fibrillation management of what I do in my specialist atrial fibrillation clinic shouldn't be any different to what the non-cardiologist in my hospital is approaching atrial fibrillation. And that shouldn't be any different to what a general practitioner in the primary care community is looking after atrial fibrillation patients. And also the concepts of managing atrial fibrillation in explanation to patients shouldn't be any different to what we do as physicians. This led to the proposal of what is now referred to, as I mentioned in the title, the ABC pathway, because A is avoid stroke, A is anticoagulation. So A, avoid stroke with anticoagulation. B is better symptom management. And this is the decisions about rate control or rhythm control focus on the patient's symptoms. And the C is the cardiovascular and comorbidity risk management, therefore addressing cardiac ischemia, treating the heart failure, blood pressure to targets, looking for sleep apnea. That's the lifestyle aspects like obesity, alcohol consumption. It's the patient's psychological comorbidity and the patient values and preferences. So this is a concept to simplify the management that is understandable by cardiologists, non-cardiologists, and patients, and general practitioners. Now, it's no point putting a simple pathway when it hasn't been tested. So we initiated a program of work, and what was presented in this Congress in the late-breaking science session was the first of the outputs. And you could say it was a proof of concept presentation that I gave at the late-breaking science, because I use a trial cohort and did a postdoc analysis of the trial outcome data in relation to the outcomes if they were ABC compliant versus non-ABC compliant.
So Do you have an algorithm that allows you to evaluate compliance?
Well, yes, because for this particular cohort, everybody was anticoagulated. And this was quite an old trial. It's actually a post-hoc analysis of the AFFIRM trial data set. So it's actually an old trial. But nonetheless, well, as we all know, it's an excellent trial, validated and adjudicated outcomes, which is just for proof of concept, that's what I needed. So for the A, everybody was on warfarin. So we were looking at quality of anticoagulant control when good quality was defined as a TTR, time in therapeutic range, above 70% and above. And that would compare to those under 70%. So the ABC group, in fact, had a TTR of around 80, 85%. The non-ABC group had a TTR of about 65%.
So in the UK, has the transition to the newer anticoagulants been at what rate, for example? Because in our practices, it's probably approaching 70, 80%. So we see very few patients on warfarin anymore.
In the UK has generally been a slowish adopter, but nonetheless, what we do see now is the uptake of NOACs, a non-vitamin K antagonist or anticoagulants, of the new diagnosed atrial fibrillation. Virtually majority of them go on to NOACs unless they've got some other contraindication to these drugs. But then again, if these drugs are given at the optimized dose as per the label, that would be categorized as fulfilling, ticking the box for the A of ABC.
So one of my personal concerns about management of atrial fibrillation is the total lack of attention to blood pressure. I see tremendous focus on the anticoagulation, but ignoring the blood pressure is probably the most attributable risk factor for their atrial fibrillation.
Absolutely. And so within the C criterion of the ABC, we are recommending to optimize blood pressure control, aiming at least for a target of under 140 or 85. And this is what we modeled into the post-hoc analysis. And in addition, just since we're on the topic of the C criterion, with regard to the other comorbidities, we made sure that they were appropriate secondary prevention drugs. For example, if they've got coronary disease or peripheral artery disease, they want a statin. If they're heart failure or had a previous myocardial infarction, they were at least on an ACE inhibitor or a beta blocker, and a statin, of course, and aspirin, so that sort of thing.
So how frequently do you use this monitoring to determine where you are?
I think the assessment of patient risks and patient profile and optimization of their risks ideally should be at every patient contact. In a separate analysis we published in JACC earlier this year, showing how patients' risk profile does not remain static, in patient with atrial fibrillation, that is. And in this large data set from the Taiwan National Registries, well, firstly, many studies look at a risk factor or a biomarker at baseline, and they look at the outcomes 5 years later or 10 years later. And you can see the flaw immediately. In the 5 years or 10 years, patients get older, they get more comorbidities or incident comorbidities, and they get all kinds of things changed with their therapies. So what we showed in that particular analysis, how patient's risk profile is the more stronger determinant of risk, because we look at baseline CHA2DS2-VASc, we look at follow-up CHA2DS2-VASc, we look at the change in the CHA2DS2-VASc, which is, we call the delta CHA2DS2-VASc as a sort of, for the sake of brevity. In fact, the most powerful predictor of bad outcomes was the delta CHA2DS2-VASc. So the message really is, when we look after AFib patients, risk is not static. We have to manage them proactively. And the ABC pathway is simple enough that at every time there's a patient contact, we can just think through the A, B, and C. And so simple, even the patients can think about that.
So have you tried to transfer some of this to the patients? And also, who in the UK, who does this? Is it the cardiologist? Is it a non-physician in the clinic?
Well, the ABC pathway was designed so that not only I can do this in my AFib specialist clinic by the specialist cardiologist, the non-cardiologist physicians in the hospital can apply it, and also the general practitioners can apply it, because we wanted to streamline the management. And in our late-breaking presentation, as the proof of concept, it works tremendously well, because those who are ABC compliant, in others fulfilling all the optimized pathway criteria compared to those who didn't, we'll call them the non-ABC compliant, in terms of the hard outcomes like mortality and the composite of stroke, bleeding, and cardiovascular mortality, and the outcome of hospitalizations and days in hospital, they were significantly lower in the ABC compliant group compared to the non-ABC. Now, the effect size is quite impressive because for mortality and for the composite outcome, we're talking around a 60% effect size of benefit. That sounds quite large, but actually there have been two small trials of so-called integrated care or holistic care for patients with atrial fibrillation. So it's multidisciplinary, nurse-led interventions. And a meta-analysis of these small studies was published in the journal Heart. First author is Gallagher. So it's a meta-analysis of the previous studies. It does show that an approach managing the whole patient or integrated approach to AF management reduces significantly mortality, significantly reduces hospitalization.
Great message, Greg, and for our listeners, stay tuned for the ABC pathway.
Thank you very much.
This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.